Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And we are joined today by Sarah Perez and Catherine Hsu, two previous guest hosts of the show. This is the first time we've had two different guest hosts, but everyone really wanted to talk about tidying up with Marie Kondo. So welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy Friday. It's probably not going to be Friday when we publish, but it's Friday for us right now. We're living in that Friday energy.
In real time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So like I said, we're going to review Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. I think it's going to be a little bit of a different format because I'm getting the sense there's a lot of life stuff that this has made a lot of us think about.
This is going to be like a therapy session, basically.
Yes.
Hugely. I need it.
I know. Me too. I've just been so desperate to like talk about it with someone, anyone.
I've been talking to my mom about it nonstop, literally. She's like, Jordan, I'm tidy. I don't need to hear about this. And I'm like, but I do. So,
well, I've been talking to Twitter about it and nobody's responded to me except like Brian subtweeted me. And then he tells me in Slack that he subtweeted me, which I think makes it look longer a subtweet.
I blame you and Sarah really a lot for a lot of my life in 2019 because you guys tweeted about this show and literally within a minute, I had put it on and I didn't stop watching it until it was over.
And your life's changed for the better, right?
Maybe. I don't know. We're going to find out. I'm stuck in a limbo right now. I'm on paper and I have
paper is hard
for about paper a week. Oh. Yeah. So especially for me, I'm like that person that like writes angstily, randomly all the time. And then ends up keeping it all, even though all of it's literal garbage. Like no one would even enjoy reading it. So I have like all of this stuff that feels important to me, but it actually isn't important to me or anyone else. So that's
it's
been great.
Sentimental paper.
I'm living in a pile of shit right now because I have my books organized, but the ones that I'm getting rid of, I haven't actually gotten out of the house. They're just in piles around me.
I think that's normal.
And I cleaned out all the closets of clothes. But when I did that, I also got rid of all of the extra bullshit storage I had in there. So all the stuff that was like sitting on shelves and stuff in there is now just out in the bedroom, on the bedroom floor until I reconfigure the closets, which who knows when that'll happen. So like I said, I got stuck in the middle and now my life is messier than it should be. So I need to like power on again. Hopefully this re-inspires me, you know, because I was cracking there those first few days, and now I've slowed to a crawl.
You sound you've gone way deeper into this Connery thing than the rest of us have.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you're actually like following it step by step.
No, I am following it step by step. I got the book, and I'm like,
oh wow,
I did everything. Like I'm thanking shit. I'm like, I've fully committed to it.
Wow.
Okay, so we'll get more in depth with that in just a second. I think the one other thing that Catherine said she wanted to talk about a little bit in terms of just recent streaming news is the release of these two different Fyre Festival documentaries. One called, I forgot what it's called. The one on Hulu is called Fyre Fraud. Fyre Fraud. And then the other one is on Netflix is just called Fyre. But what's interesting about it is that
Netflix was like, we've got this big Fyre Festival thing that we're doing and it'll come soon. So get hype for that. And then Hulu was like, here you go.
Hulu, I mean, that's kind of genius. They just used all the marketing that Netflix did and then didn't have to spend as much money on their own.
We got you one and it's 7 days earlier. So enjoy. Netflix is like, what?
And I think, so there's also now, there's this kind of like, these kind of, they're like trading these kind of quotes where they're kind of dissing each other, the filmmakers of both documentaries, where essentially the guy who made, Chris Smith, who made the Netflix documentary, I think he gave an interview where he said, well, you know, the person who put on Fyre Festival, Billy McFarland, basically they paid, the Hulu documentary paid him a crazy amount of money to be in their documentary. And then the Hulu people were like, no, we didn't pay him that much money, although we did pay him. But also, if you want to talk about ethical compromises, the Netflix documentary is more compromised because they were co-produced by Jerry Media, which was a company that was actually involved in putting on the Fyre Festival. So it's something where neither side comes out looking very good.
Yeah.
I think both are fair points. You know, I mean, I think both are fair points because on the one hand, paying for his contribution is actually allowing this scamster to profit from the whole situation. And on the other hand, you know, it doesn't look good on either side.
Every time you have a conflict of interest, just period, especially when like your job is truth telling. We all know that documentaries tend to be biased, and it's really hard to avoid that, honestly. And to be quite honest, biased documentaries tend to be more entertaining. But
yeah. Right.
But
and when we say biased, basically just they have a point of view.
Yeah, yeah. Like they've come to an opinion, and that's what they're presenting, rather than like the impartial, objective story, right? Like Making a Murder is a great example.
And the staircase was really intensely biased, and I didn't realize. Well, I mean, they do such a good job with it, you don't realize it as you're watching it.
Yeah, you're just so like entranced.
You're
by
like,
this
oh, poor
cuckoo.
Michael Peterson, and then you Google it, and you're like, oh. I feel like I've been.
Yeah, but not even like poor. Like, I never felt like he was poor Michael Peterson. I always just felt like, what a quack. The whole group is a quack, except for it's always the lawyers who seem like the only normal people.
Yeah.
Which is funny
exactly.
Because. Well, anyway, I won't even get into that. I'm not going to just start insulting lawyers. But the point is that any conflict of interest is going to hurt, right? Like, just hurt public kind of reception of anything. Yeah. So with these two, they got combative and competitive, and then they really just hurt themselves more than anything else, both of them. So
it also
way
just
to go.
Seems like something that they should have disclosed in when I think the people who've seen the documentaries, I haven't yet, they said neither of these conflicts are disclosed in the documentary itself, which seems like, you know, something
bad
they should
move.
Have done.
Well, yeah. And there's something to be said for the fact that Fyre Festival was such a fraud. And then the two documentaries that come out about it are also
no, I think there's going to be a documentary made about the two documentaries and this whole kind
which
of...
Which will also be a fraud.
It'll be also a fraud. It'll just keep going on forever.
It's like a meta...
Right.
A meta documentary chain, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Awful.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to watch one or the other or both? I mean, I think probably we're going to try to review it at some point on the show, but I'm curious for those of you who don't have to do it for work, what are you going to do?
I've been looking forward to watching these for some time, so I'm very excited. I've already watched Hulu's, and I guess Netflix's is out now, right? Is it
right.
Today?
Yeah.
As of today,
I plan to watch that one this weekend.
What did you think of the Hulu one?
I actually thought the Hulu one had a lot of good background on the whole situation from all sides, and it was kind of, you know, even if they paid him, it was kind of interesting to see him squirm in the spotlight, Billy McFarlane, in his interviews, and how it seems like he's even trying to scam and lie even now. It was fascinating, and just it's a fun train wreck to watch the whole thing fall apart. But they had, you know, a former employee of one of his prior companies, like, spilling a lot of dirt. And they had, you know, the marketing agency, Jerry Media, commenting on how they would delete posts off the Instagram that said anything bad about Firefest. So there was a lot of background there that hopefully kind of sets you up to see Netflix's version and understand it a little better if you weren't following it closely from the first time.
That's what I was thinking, because, you know, just reading about the two documentaries, it feels like basically I can't watch one without the other, otherwise I'd feel like it was incomplete, you know. So I think there's some synergy going on there.
Yeah, so I read the review in the AV Club, and I think what they said is that if you're just gonna watch one, the Netflix one is just a better made documentary. But that ideally you would watch both, because they both have a perspective that isn't included in the other one. And I think, I mean, that's true in general. I think at least as journalists, hopefully we know that ideally when you're like really interested in a piece of news or piece of history, that you get multiple perspectives on it and don't just rely on one account. And I think that for those of you who want to go real deep with the Fyre Festival, that's probably the best approach here. Cool. Well, let's move on then to our main review, which is, again, of Tidying Up with Marie Kondo on Netflix, which has really become this phenomenon, like, where everyone on Twitter seems to be talking about it. I was at, you know, a department store near my, you know, near my home, and people were talking about whether stuff sparks joy. I mean, it really seems like something that's just taken off in the last couple of weeks.
I think before we get into reviewing the show, that's also an interesting point that Netflix now has the critical mass that it can become a source for these kind of viral sensations like Tidying Up or
Bird Box.
The Bird movie.
Yeah, Bird Box.
Yeah, Bird Box.
Bird Box movie. Where, you know, everyone sort of knows what these shows are, what these movies are, in a way that we haven't really seen since, you know, traditional television was the primary way that people watch TV. Everything became so fragmented over the years that, you know, you were watching your shows, I was watching my shows, but now Netflix is pretty much everyone has Netflix, and so we're all able to watch the same thing again and discuss it.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like there was a similar kind of spike in conversation around Queer Eye when it premiered on Netflix.
Yeah.
But this is purely subjective and anecdotal on my part, but it feels like this has become an even bigger conversation than the one around Queer Eye.
I think it's basically like I was, I was telling you before the podcast was that the show itself is, I didn't find the show itself that interesting. It's just like basic like home organization / cleaning porn. It's, you know, clean house on, it's basically like the same kind of formula that's been done on TLC for like years and years. It wasn't until I actually began to see the discussion on social media and then discussions about the discussion and then the hot takes about the discussions about the discussions that I was just like, huh, you know, maybe I'll watch the rest of this. I'll get through like all 8 episodes. And to me, that's actually, it's really interesting. What's kind of like a pretty run of the mill home improvement show has kind of unveiled so many, I mean, you know, there's been discussions about like gender and class and ableism and, race especially too. So yeah, I think for me that's, and yeah, it's like Sarah said, the fact that Netflix is so ubiquitous now has allowed these discussions to flourish for better or worse. Like some of the stuff out there has been like really problematic and some of it has been like really, you know, illuminating.
So Sarah, did you agree that as a show, it sort of feels kind of run of the mill?
I do kind of agree that there's not a ton of new innovation in cleaning. It's basically spring cleaning and with thanking the house before you clean and boxes is kind of my take on on her whole strategy. Although caveat, I have not read her book. It could be a lot more in depth than that. But I mean, I used to watch these cleaning shows all the time. I watched Clean Sweep for years, which is basically where people had become really, their houses became really cluttered, and then they would pull things out and sort them into piles, keep, sell, or toss. And you know, she's kind of going through the same things, like some things we keep, some things we toss. And you could see in some of the episodes, they had garage sales to get rid of other things. The only thing that feels a little different is that she doesn't necessarily encourage people to toss all their sentimental items. Like Jordan, you were saying you were going through paper, and she's not telling you that you don't need to you need to get rid of it. She's just telling you there's other ways to organize things. So like for example, maybe get a file cabinet.
Yeah.
So, in other cases, she does help people toss sentimental items, like the widower who needed to get rid of a lot of her husband's clothing so that she could kind of start fresh. So, And then she loves to bring in organizing boxes, which actually was pretty clever. I used my Birchbox boxes, which I have been stacking up for recycling, and now I have all my jewelry organized. So that was actually a good tip that I took away from the show, but I'm not implementing her strategy everywhere. I think there's things you can pick and choose.
Well, so like, here's my thoughts on it. I watched the whole show, like I said, and I also bought the book and I read the book. And so like, I think if you look at it on its surface and like hear the way she talks about it, like, oh, like thanking your items and like, you know, kind of treating them like they're living, breathing organisms, it seems like kind of odd, right? Like thanking the house at the beginning, like they play the piano music and stuff. And it seems really ritualistic and emotional. Like all that stuff on its surface is very annoying kind of, and like goes a step too far. But I just like was trying to think of it in reality. Like, I don't think Marie thinks of all of our stuff as living, breathing organisms or anything like that. I think the point of it is to like get you to a mental place. And she explains this really well in the book, but to get you to like a place mentally where you're feeling good about what you're doing, because there is like a lot of guilt associated with throwing things away, right? Like one of the things that I save is cards. Like my dad sends me a card once a month. You know, he travels a lot and he'll send me a card and he'll write a little note in it. And I keep them all. Like I have literally a drawer full of cards, but like having that many isn't actually like, when do I actually look through 300 cards? Like never, you know what I mean? So like keeping one or two of them in a place where I actually see them and they actually do bring me joy, and saying kind of like, thank you for all the other cards, but that, you know, it doesn't mean that they don't mean anything to me, right? But it just means that it's best to not have that many of them, right? So I don't know. I think it's all about manipulating people mentally. Yeah. It's not really about like believing the quote, like mysticism around it.
That definitely resonates with me because I actually like, I save everything with my mother's handwriting on it, even just like post-it notes where she's like, oh, here's your bank card. Keep it safe. I have like, I feel almost superstitious about throwing it out. I think my mom would be surprised to notice actually, but yeah. So I have a lot of paper and cards, and not even cards, but like post-it notes and things. It's like, definitely it's about stress management. I mean, I think all cleaning methods that have kind of taken off, like they acknowledge that cleaning, it's not just about rearranging your stuff. It's also a very kind of emotionally loaded process. So, you know, tying up, Marie Kondo does the thinking the house thing. And then there's this other method. It's called Unfuck Your Habitat, but they usually use the, initials like UFYH. They basically, what they do is that they have a rule where you clean for 15 minutes and then you like take a break for 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. You split it. And I actually read that book too. And the author was like, this is non-negotiable. You have to take a break. And the reason why we insist on you taking a break, whether you or not you think you need one, is because, you know, you're going to get burned out. And that actually cleaning methods is kind of like aimed towards people who, you know, it was originally created for people who have maybe depression or disabilities or, you know, other things that might make other cleaning methods not work for them. But the similarities between, like, you know, and earlier there was also one called Fly Lady. I'm kind of giving myself away. Like, I've tried a lot of these methods. It's ultimately all about like trying to figure out a mindset that is realistic and manageable for you. So, you know, actually, I didn't actually do much organization because of the series, but I did try the whole, like, you know, getting down your knees and thanking the house. I don't know if I should confess that, but that was the only thing I didn't do. I was like, you know, so before I like how I did a laundry, I was just like, okay, well, thank you for your service. And I was like, okay, this feels weird, but at the same time, I don't see how it's any different from like, you know, quick mindfulness exercises.
Right. And I think a lot of it, honestly, to me, the most like emotional part of it is that it's not necessarily getting rid of like things that I thought were sentimental, but that maybe don't belong. Because I do appreciate that Marie Kondo is like, if you have 100 pictures from one day that you loved that are a great memory, if you keep 3 of them that really capture the essence and display them, you're going to get so much more out of it than a box of 100 pictures you never open. And I appreciate that. But for me, the piece that was most emotional, I think, is that like my apartment, this is the first apartment I've lived in where I solely was the only person who decorated it. Mm-hmm. Like I chose what color I wanted to paint the wall. I like bought my furniture. Every single thing in this place is me and mine. And so like the process of getting rid of all of the extra, right? Like all of the stuff that isn't necessary, all of the gadgets and bullshit that's come in over the years, and like all of the just extra random paper. I didn't have a shredder for a while, so I had a bunch of paper with personal identifying information on it that I didn't feel comfortable throwing away, that just got, you know, piled up and stuff. And I feel like if I do this the right way and actually cut down this apartment to everything that I truly love, then I can do the ultimate dream of it, which is like, I got halfway through decorating it the way I wanted to. But there's, for example, I have this one closet that's actually really deep. It's so deep that it has two hanging bars that go horizontally across. So I use the back bar for all the stuff that I didn't wear regularly. But when I first moved into the apartment, I always had this idea that I would just remove the first bar and turn it into a nice walk-in closet, like get a light in there and put in some drawers and really like build it out to be a nice closet. And so like that to me is like a completion of like a personal growth thing, not necessarily, you know, your house is a representation of who you are, right? Like where you want to spend your time, all the things that make you happy and make you feel like you. And to leave it halfway done is actually really sad, you know? So like, in my opinion, that to me is like the most kind of thing that actually touches me about it. The rest is like very practical. And I think like, even with the clothes stuff, right? Like part of the Cohn Marie method that resonates with me is that she says, if everything you own, you love, then you'll have a much easier time maintaining, keeping it tidy. And I've noticed that's true. Like even with my clothes, like I had my laundry done for the first time since I went through and refolded and organized all my clothes. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking to myself the first time I was doing it, like, I will not want to fold my clothes like this forever. Like this is actually takes time and like focus, you know, to do it right. And my laundry came and I was like, of course I want to, like, I love looking at my clothes all organized and I love pulling one shirt out, you know, and just knowing that it's going to fit. It doesn't have any stains on it. It's going to look good. And so when my clothes came, I was like, I'm ready to fold, you know, like, I don't know. I like the idea that every single thing in my closet right now is something I'm excited to wear. And you know me, I'm a little different because I'm a very uniform person. I wear jeans and a t-shirt and a hoodie and a leather jacket. That's my clothes. So, but now every single pair of jeans and every single t-shirt is clean and fits instead of there being like an extra 200 where I would be throwing them around the room until I found the one that I want, you know? So I don't know. I've really enjoyed it.
I think that gets to one of the things you were mentioning earlier, Jordan, about, you know, how this ties, like the tidying process connects to, you know, a lot of your perception of yourself as an adult and about like your home as your space. And I think that was probably the most interesting about the show to me is the way that these discussions about the home, like, and she would always say, like, why did you want me to come in? Why do you want to tidy up? It always inevitably brings in all these other things about where these people see where they are in their life. And I think that's also why, you know, the show has ended up in, to Catherine's point about how in a lot of ways it's a kind of, you know, it's kind of a formulaic show. The ideas in it aren't necessarily that radical, but this fairly straightforward show, I think, has prompted so much conversation because there's so much of how much of we, how we see ourselves tied up in how we, like, you know, store our, in our stuff and in our house. And so all of that kind of comes out as we talk about the show.
Well, and it's like, have you,
I mean, it's a perfect mix of like practical information about cleaning out your house and just quirky, weird, and sort of just stuff that's sort of begging to be made fun of, like thanking the house or that whole first show where the husband and wife are like super resentful of each other. And it's like, babe, can you do hangers or whatever?
Little kids running around screaming boobies, you know? Like, and I was just like, wow, coffee. This is bizarre.
Yeah, there was this, I saw the little kid had a Starbucks in his hand. I'm like, what is going on here?
Hot chocolate, but even so, probably a bad idea. No, but I think that it actually, just like you were saying, Anthony, like it ties in. Did you guys read that BuzzFeed article about millennial burnout?
I did. That's a great article.
I thought
everyone read it. I didn't read it because I saw the words burnout and was like, I can't handle this right now.
Right. No, I feel you. It's very like this thing that people, the reason that the article was read so much and distributed so widely was because it actually like did the math, I feel like, on a lot of this stuff where like the idea of going to the post office, for example. I went to the post office recently and I was there for an hour and a half. And it was one of those things that you just like have to do. And in the past, I was like, okay, well, I'll just like foot the cost of the $100 thing that I was going to get so that I don't have to spend an hour and a half in the post office. And I think that the Marie Kondo thing is kind of like meshes with the premise of that article, which is that like if you strip down to only the things you care about, then like kind of the little tasks don't feel so quite so monumental. And also the idea that like millennials, or at least for me personally, I can't speak for all millennials, but for me personally, like the idea of adulting, I hate that term. And I hate when people talk about adulting, but I also really truly get it, because there are certain parts of my life that I completely have under control. And if you looked at my desk right now, you'd know that that's not one of those pieces. Right. So like kind of, I don't know.
I don't think millennials are the only generation experiencing this sort of burnout. I think that it's a combination of the way that we work and the internet kind of infiltrating our lives. So even if you're 40 or 50 or 60, if you're still going to a corporate job where they issue you an email account and a phone, a laptop, then you're kind of expected to be always available. Even if you're clocking out at the end of the day, you feel like if you're on a project or something, you need to respond to that email. So I think that that sort of sense of, oh God, I'm always working, is affecting a lot of people. And it's causing us to deprioritize some of our personal stuff we need to get done, and makes it feel like something as simple as mailing a package, you know, where you have to make a special trip to the FedEx drop-off place, is almost overwhelmingly hard because we've just been working on so many other things. Right. So,
well, I remember like 15 years ago, my dad was like, my life is over. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, my company issued Blackberries, so there's never going to be a time where I'm clocked out. And he recognized it immediately. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like he spent a month with the Blackberry. It was like the day he got it, he was like,
he knew.
The day he got it, he was like, no, this whole, you know, the idea of me not being reachable is over. And I agree with what you're saying. I don't think it's just millennials, but I do think it's this combination of a bunch of things. And I think that that combined with Marie Kondo saying like, if you can pare down your life, it'll be easier for you to maintain it, really resonated with a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like it definitely, and the timing, you can't overlook that it came out on New Year's Day, right? And then
yeah, it seems very
like, I'm starting my year fresh, right? Like how that is so powerful, just the timing of it alone, you know?
I don't know if you guys had home ec when you were in school, because I saw somebody on Twitter mention.
I did.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things that's just been cut out because of the lack of funding along with arts education and I guess cursive. But it's like, but the thing is like, the person mentioned was that like home economics, you know, every like junior high or high school kid had to take a course where they learn like cooking basics, like cleaning basics, budgeting basics, just, you know, it's like, you know, like Doreen said before, like, you know, quote unquote adulting. And it was basically, you learn those basics, and it was also, you kind of, you know, created the mindset that these aren't things that like have a moral value. It isn't like a sign of how like organized you are or anything. It's just, you know, a learnable skill. So, and, you know, that resonated with me. And I think that's one of the reasons these shows resonate with a lot of people, is because we're not really taught those anymore. If you have a lot of clutter, or if you can't cook healthy food, it's seen kind of as a moral, or it's like it's seen as a feeling of character. And then, of course, it becomes more daunting. You know,
of course. Yeah. It's a reflection of you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also treated like it's not real work, I think, is part of
exactly,
the,
yeah.
You know. And or that
it's
also
easy, and that it doesn't take much time, right. Or that it, like, you know, it's just part of life. Like, what are you complaining about? Like, I know that my mom is like kind of a, never cared about Marie Kondo at all, but is essentially her. Like, she doesn't keep any extra anything. There's not a whole lot of sentimental stuff in that house. Her clothes are all clothes that she wears. Like, she throws away stuff like it doesn't matter. She'll throw away your shoes if you leave them in the wrong spot. You know what I mean? So, like, she's always been like that. And when I'm at her house, or when I was living with her as a kid, I put stuff away. Like, I put stuff away because that was just the way that it went. But when I grew up and had my own place, I actually never – I know how to put stuff back if everything's where it belongs. But starting out and accumulating shit and moving into a place, I don't know where any of it goes. It doesn't fit. And so you just kind of stay in that place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think this is good for, like, I'm not an untidy person. I just never started in the right spot, if that makes sense.
I actually, my mom is like I really relate to that because my mom is a Zach same way. She's not sentimental about stuff. If she heard that I keep scraps of paper with her handwriting, she'd probably be like, why? why? She'd just be befuddled. And then I kind of grew up and it's honestly like, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I think there are kind of like differences in the way neat and messy people perceive space, because I honestly have inherited like none of that at all, which is, I think, one of the reasons why like Marie Kondo and, you know, Unfuck Your Habitat and all those other books are really fascinating to me, even if I don't actually put anything that I read or watch into practice.
Let's talk about the book bit.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. Absolutely. So there is this sort of, I mean, I think there's a couple of different ways in which people have criticized the show. And I think a lot of them are interesting to talk about. To be honest, I think the book one is kind of the most straightforward,
yeah.
Which is just some people complained about the fact that, you know, like, for example, there's this article in The Cut that I shared with you guys where this novelist, Ananka Schofield, says, do not listen to Marie Kondo or Con Marie in relation to books. Fill your apartment and world with them. And I think that's just... I mean, so there's a couple of things.
My nightstand is made out of books, yeah. You know? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
And I think, like, there's a couple different elements to that. One is just Marie Kondo is not telling you have to throw away all of your books or even any of your books. She's, as I understand it, basically saying, and as shown in the show, is she's saying, go through your books, make sure these are books you actually want to keep around. That's it. Like, which seems like such an obvious and non-controversial statement. And I think a lot of that, again, is because it's tied up into this idea of, oh, like, you know, books are this precious, privileged object, and their knowledge and their imagination. And I mean, that is true. And books are also objects that clutter up your apartment and that you should clean out once in a while.
Well, and like, I went through the process, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I did the book thing, right? And I'm an English lit major, and I went to school here. So all the books I read in college and stuff, all those classes, philosophy classes, and like, English lit and Brit lit and all that stuff, all those books are still here. And so I counted, I went from 140 books to 50. And the way that I saw it was either I never read them and won't, I read them and won't reread them, or like they're not something that they're something I read, but they're not something I want to represent me. Like, for example, I have like all of the 50 Shades books, right? Like, why do I have hardback covers of 50 Shades up on my shelf? Like, that's not who I am. Do you know what I mean?
You're supposed to buy that on Kindle, Jordan.
Yeah. Well, this was before. This was back in the day. This is when I was like in college and going to the Barnes & Noble next to my dorm for all my books. But I mean, what I ended up keeping were the books that I feel like, whether I read them again or not, are books that, while sitting up on my shelf, my nice bookshelf that my girlfriend made for me, that they are a representation of something that really matters and is important to me. And that is a reflection of who I am. And I feel better about it. My bookshelf isn't full anymore too. So now I can put other cool stuff up there. I can put a plant up there or a clock or a picture, right? And like, that will look and feel better than like, I literally had them stacked to where the whole thing was filled up. Like, it was gross looking. So I agree. I think books are important and I love books, but how much more value does that book create globally when it's passed on to someone else who can read it and enjoy it than it does on my shelf, you know? And so I get why people were upset about it, but I also think that that was like such an overreaction. And I think until you actually get, and I don't think you can get it from the show. I think until you actually like read Marie's books and truly understand where she's coming from with a lot of this stuff, it's easy to criticize it, in my opinion. But I'm a follower now, obviously.
Well,
so
what I thought interesting about the reaction was that a lot of it was honestly like at least for a couple of days until, you know, the kind of pushback against the reaction started, was that a lot of it was very vitriolic. Like it was really intense. And there were people basically being like, bitch, stay away from my books and you monster. Like, there was literally a meme that called her a monster. And I know it's like tongue in cheek, but at the same time, I was like, you know, having watched the show, I was like, whoa. I mean, she came across honestly as being kind of very patient. Well, she came across as being very gentle. Like, if people were upset, she was like, oh, okay, you don't have to get rid of that. You just figure out a way to display it where, you know, you can enjoy it. she actually seemed pretty compassionate. So I kind of saw a reaction. I was like, whoa.
And she also found ways to store stuff that, you know, that she would throw away if she was actually in charge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they were like, no, this matters. And she was like, okay, well, let's find a great way for this to matter openly and where you can see it and enjoy it. And I thought that was really cool. And you could tell, I mean, it's hard to knock Marie Kondo. The first, very first episode, that same little blonde kid that was running around screaming for boobies. The first thing that that kid did was like, I want to be held by Marie Kondo, which honestly, not to like judge parents because I'm not one, but that felt like more of a reflection of the parents than Marie, that they were very, you know, like angry people. I could see how a small child would want to be in the arms of Marie over the arms of those parents because they seemed to let the kids run the show, and kids want structure and calm and, you know, control, which Marie like represented. The second she walked into that house, you knew she was the boss and neither of the parents, right? But yeah, I think it's easy to knock Marie Kondo, but she is, I've bought in to her money making scheme.
I would say, first of all, on the books, like, I'm definitely somebody who, like, for a long time, you know, just because of space and like moving somewhat often and having constrained book space, you know, that I think probably had a collection of books that I was proud of, but also was like controlled because I only had so much space and I could tell you exactly where every book was and whether I'd read it. And I think in my current apartment, I've started to reach that point where I can't anymore. And like the books are kind of getting out of control. And so like, it's been really helpful actually to say, oh, I should probably go through it and like go through all these books and be like, why do I have this book? How did this one? And again, I don't think she's saying there's a specific number that's good. It's more just go through the process. And I think in general, that's like one of the really remarkable things about the show is how she, aside from like saying, here are the steps of the process, she doesn't really prescribe a lot of different things. She just says, she asks questions. And by asking these questions, she kind of, I mean, in a lot of ways, can push people in really interesting directions. Like there's that one episode where I think the family, like the at the beginning, the husband, you know, they're downsizing and the husband is like, oh, I never go in the kitchen. I never cook. And very quickly it becomes apparent to everyone that the wife and the mom has taken on an insanely disproportionate amount of the domestic duties.
Like that was so hard for me to watch because she felt so bad and she just kept crying.
She felt so bad about it too. And I was like, you need a new husband.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, does your husband spark joy? I don't think so. Like, I'm Maria.
Yeah, throw him out.
Marie didn't have to say this man is garbage. She just asked everyone, like she asked him, like, do you think like you're doing like your share of the work? And he's like, oh shit, I'm not. And I think that was really interesting that like they can, that just in this fairly non-confrontational style, she can encompass so much and have people sort of rethink their lives in these bigger ways.
Did you guys it's very therapeutic, right? Like a psychologist doesn't like talk to you for an hour and then say like, okay, well, here's your biggest problem. You have a fear of abandonment. Like that's not how it works. Yeah. They like ask you questions so that you can figure it out yourself. Because if you don't figure it out yourself, then there's no point. They could tell you what's wrong, but unless you believe it, you know? So, I mean, she goes about it in that way. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Did you guys see that emotional labor comic that made the rounds about a year or two ago?
Yeah.
It was basically how like women are, you know, guys, it was basically
the
like
mental load.
The mental load, exactly, where women are just like, they're playing out logistics. They're the ones, you know, they don't just like tidy up stuff. They also kind of figure out how to organize things. They're the ones kind of like,
they have the calendar in their head. They know where all the kids' clothes are. They know that your sweater is in the laundry right now. Like all of the things they're tracking.
Yeah. And I was like, that actually came out like about a few months after I had my baby. And I just remember seeing it and I'd be like, oh my God. And I just forwarded it to my husband because I think we have kind of like a dynamic in a lot of them. I mean, my husband's like, he's awesome. But at the same time, I think it's definitely like, it's,
does I spark just caveat, joy, Catherine,
like
he's, or what?
He sparks like joy in me, sparks joy. But at the same time, like, I think that really resonates, I think, with a lot of, you know, people like me, like, you know, we're in marriages that we think are egalitarian, but at the same time, like, we are products of the societies and cultures that we grew up in. And, you know, when I read it, I was like, holy crap, like I am, you know, in charge of doing all of these, a lot of these things for my household. And honestly, like I don't have, like, my executive functioning isn't any better than my husband's. In fact, I would say it's kind of worse. So I was just, why am I, like, supposed to be kind of like the locus of the household, you know? And that's what I thought about when I watched episode 3, was that the mother is not just doing a lot of the housework. She's actually, like, you know, there was a part where the kids, where the husbands were like, yeah, I don't know where anything is. Like, if we need anything, we just ask where it is. Like, she's basically like the card catalog of the family.
Well, and to be fair, their place was, like, so poorly organized and downsized that, like, that was triple hard for everyone. But that's the point, right? Like, you gotta keep the stuff that fits in the space.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Jordan, you've actually got the book. You're in the middle of the KonMari process. Catherine and Sarah, it sounds like you're also kind of in an ad hoc way starting to do some of this tidying up.
Yeah, I bought the book when it came out, like, a few years ago. And so I kind of did, at least I think I did a close part. And then we moved while I was pregnant. And, you know, we moved to an apartment with no closets. There are no closets in my apartment, none at all. There's no closets, no storage space. So basically we had to, you know, we had to figure out really quickly, like, what we wanted to keep and what we wanted to get rid of. So I think the thing is, like, I didn't actually do in a methodical way. Like, I didn't actually follow the book's steps like Jordan's doing, but basically what she wrote about does, you know, when you hold something, does it make you happy? You know, even like she has a part in her book where she's like, you know, for a lot of people keep their old clothes and, you know, just kind of wear them as pajamas or something. You know, they're like, okay, well, this
is like loungewear
or like workwear. And then she's, and, you know, there's a part where she's like, well, you know, does that make you feel good? Like, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, why don't
that's got to be the one that's hardest for me. It's going to be hardest for me because I work from home and I live in sweats most of the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And me too.
And the idea of, like, buying clothes to, like, she was like, women, like, buy pajamas that, like, are silky and beautiful, you know? I'm like, nah, girl. Yeah. I'm wearing my UGA t-shirt and my sweatpants with holes in the butt. Like, that's just what's up. That's how I have to be. But that sparks joy for me, right? Yeah. So maybe I'm doing it right. I don't know.
I think you can take the pieces of her organizational tips and just apply them as necessary to the parts of your house and your life that need fixing up. Like, for example, before the holidays, when I knew my daughter was going to get a lot more presents, we did a cleaning up, tidying up of her playroom. So we cleared out all the toys that she didn't play with anymore. And it also teaches her that this is something that you should do on a regular basis to make room for more things. You get rid of old things. And she's actually pretty good about letting go.
That's great.
Probably even more so than me.
That's a great
where I'm like, trait. Are you sure? This is special.
It's a great trait to give to a kid. Because Marie Kondo said, like, a lot of times your parents and older siblings and stuff are the ones that kind of, like, enforce you keeping shit. You know? And so if your parents are the ones telling you, like, throw it away, that's, like, such a good thing for her, you know?
Yeah. And so you can do that. I mean, I'm always cleaning out old clothes and occasionally, like you said, the gadgets have to be refreshed from time to time, donated, et cetera, because of our jobs. You can just kind of do it as you need to, as different parts of your home get, you know, overwhelming, because it's not necessarily the case that your entire house is a wreck that needs an overhaul in a spring cleaning. There's just times where certain areas build up. So once you kind of have these methods in mind, you can apply them to your life on an ongoing basis without having to do the full program. And I think that's really useful.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I have to do the full program because my house is a mess. It's like 4 years of accumulated junk that's never been thrown away. It's highly hoardery, and it's like it's exactly what Marie was talking about. Because if I invited you over, I mean, not right now because I'm mid KonMari, but if I invited you over a month ago, you would say, like, oh, this place is really nice, like, great job, because it's normally pretty neat and clean. But it's just the second you open a drawer or open a closet is when things get really out of control. So that's all the stuff that needs to happen for me. But I'm feeling good about it, honestly.
I feel like I've become more mindful about you know, my apartment and my stuff in general. I mean, I think in general, I am sort of somebody who like just is very eager to throw stuff out like at the drop of a hat to the, probably to some, sometimes to my detriment where I'm like, oh wait, I need that. Why did I, you know,
so you're like me and Jordan's moms.
Yeah. But like, I'm probably moving in a few months. And so I think like now I'm already trying to like implement like little things of like probably this weekend, because we have the 3-day weekend. I'm hoping to like just go through my books and like toss out stuff that I, or, you know, give away stuff I don't need. And, but I think also before I move, I could imagine that as part of the packing process, I kind of want to go through like a little mini Con Marie. So, I'm not really looking forward to that, but I do think that'll be a really useful thing to do.
So I do have one story to tell. It feels like we're winding down a little bit, but I want to tell a story of the clothes thing, because it just blew my mind how this all happened. So when I went through all my clothes, I ended up with a total of 15 bags of clothes and shoes and accessories and all everything, right? Jackets and sweaters. And I put like, I also had 4 luggage suitcases that I was getting rid of. So I put four of those bags were suitcases. And I called a donation service and they said, okay, well, we'll come pick those up tomorrow, anytime tomorrow. So just label the bags and put them out on the curb and we'll come grab them tomorrow. And I was like, well, is there any way you can like call me and let me know? Cause I feel like it's a bad idea to just leave them out there. And they were like, no, it'll be fine as long as you put like a sign or mark them. People shouldn't, you know, mess with them or whatever. And I was like, okay. So I brought down, I was marching the bags down. I live on the 4th floor and it was windy and freezing out that day. And I was sweating. And by the time, like I was bringing bag 7 and 8 down, bag number 1 had been like torn open and all the clothes were on the street. So I kept bringing all the clothes down and then I brought more trash bags down and I put the first bag away. And then I decided to go get some coffee. And when I was on my way back from getting coffee, literally every single bag had been torn open to where the clothes were just in a mountain on my sidewalk.
Oh my God.
Which hurt a lot. Like, does not feel good. One, because it's a huge mess. Two, because it's all my stuff. So it's kind of like embarrassing and like a violation for it to just be like laying. I know I'm getting rid of it, but I don't want it laying in front of my building either. You know what I mean? Like all out in the open like that. And as I'm coming back, I also see a kid going through it. Like not a kid, like a teenager, like an 18-year-old going through it. And I was like, yo, like, are you from Pick Purple? And which is the name of the delivery service or the pickup service. And he was like, no. And I was like, oh, well, then does that belong to you? And he was like, no, I'm just looking. And I was like, oh, well, go away. Like, get out of the bag of clothes. He was dressed really nice, too. And then.
Okay, but in his defense, clothes on the curbside usually means.
Bed bugs.
Hey, take them.
No, it means bed bugs in New York. You don't. I'm sorry.
Like, wash
you
could,
if you see a.
This is true, but I mean, whenever you put something on the curb anywhere, it's generally considered trash, something somebody's getting rid of, and no harm in checking it out.
Finish the story. Well, also, yeah, sure, no harm in checking it out, but to pull every single thing out and throw it around just seems like poor behavior,
that's rude. Yeah.
Right? And also, I'm not trying to judge anyone. If you want to pick up like someone's clothes off the curb, that's, you know, that's
maybe
something.
You need clothes.
That's fine. You know, and if they needed it, that would be fine too. But making a big mess is not something that is acceptable. And to me, I would pick up like a chair or a bookcase off the curb, but not cloth things, because you just don't know where they've been. But anyways, so then I go back and I rebag everything and I put a sign up that says, and also I'm trying to donate it to people who are truly in need. So like, when people who are like, my neighborhood is mostly young parents, and when they're like rifling through clothes, I don't know, I just, something about that really turned me off. But then I'm going through and putting everything back, and I put a sign up that says like, don't touch this. This is for being donated to a service for people who really need it. Please don't touch this. And as I'm bagging it up, sitting under this sign, this dude comes up to me and he says, didn't you read the sign? And I was like, yeah, dude, I put the sign up. I'm putting it all away again after everyone messed it up. And he was like, nah, you're looking through it for things you want. Like, I can tell.
Wow.
And I was literally shoveling it into bags. I don't know how I could be looking through it, but I just found I was so pissed. And that was just such an annoying morning. And that's my story of no good deed goes unpunished.
It really broke your faith in New York.
Sounds like more of an issue with the service.
It was an issue with the service and an issue with my neighborhood. Let's go, folks. Yeah. Come on. Jeez.
Just take it to Goodwill next time.
I know, but the thing is, like, I'm in New York and I don't have a car. So, like, lugging those bags somewhere is actually...
Oh, yeah, you had, like, 15 bags, right?
15 bags and lugging them somewhere would have been, like, a real project. Like, it would have... I needed to, like, start a whole workout regimen before trying to do that. So
I totally get it. Like, if I... The same thing had happened to my clothes, I would have, like, even though I was giving them away, I would have felt really uncomfortable. You know, in my apartment building, we have, like, just this... It's a recycling area. That's where people also drop off things for donation. And I hate it when I bring something down and when I go down there next time, it's still there. It just feels, you know, it feels uncomfortable. And I don't know if it's just me being sentimental or not, but it kind of reminds me of that IKEA commercial from about like 8 years ago or so, you know, where they basically kind of have this lamp, you know, and they have this music in the rain and you feel really bad for Lamb. And then this guy comes down to Swedish accent. He says, many of you are really sorry for this lamp. That's because you're crazy. It's just a lamp. You know, and a new one is much better. And I was like, you know, I think about that commercial all the time. But yeah, it's just basically, you know, it's yeah, I totally understand. I mean, it's almost like with the marine condom, one of the reactions to it has been, you know, people getting upset because they think she's suggesting that you throw that stuff away instead of donating it. And I know, like, that isn't, I don't think she actually says that, but that isn't, like, a completely, like, unusual idea. There are a lot of, like, cleaning groups, especially for people who are really struggling with keeping their spaces clean or who are kind of, like, getting near, like, hoarder level, is that the people who help them will suggest, like, you know, don't worry about, like, selling things or, you know, find a perfect place to donate them. Just find the most expedient method to get rid of them. Otherwise, because of that sentimental pull that a lot of people have to objects, it's going to just take forever, you know. So
I have a sentimental attachment to my furniture, so yeah. It's really hard. If I ever need to move to a smaller place, I'm gonna have trouble because I'm like, this was my grandmother's table, this was my parents, you know, whatever. So it's, I don't know why I'm like that, but I wish I could downsize some of my furniture and just I need a whole show for that.
We'll get you there.
It's just a lamp. Sarah,
it's just a lamp. And a new one is much better.
Slack you that one today.
Yeah.
One last thing I wanted to talk about before we wrap up is I think, you know, one of the things that we've been talking to beforehand was sort of the depiction of Marie herself. And I think that before I watched the show, I've been kind of warned about, like, whether or not as an Asian I was going to be a little bit uncomfortable with Marie and the way people will respond to Marie. And I have to say, after watching it, I feel mostly positive about the show. I think, like, it's fine. And I think that is how Marie, you know, either how she is or how she chooses to present herself on the show. But I also understand the sort of conflicted feeling that some people have where she becomes almost this kind of like cartoon character who plays into the way I think sometimes Asians and Asian women in particular can be portrayed. So I understand why people are like some Asian Americans kind of have complicated feelings about the show.
Well, as an Asian American woman, it's like I have an opinion. But no, actually, no, I agree with you, Anthony. It was just like basically in terms of when I was watching the show, I kind of felt like the producer was like the casting of the households themselves was obviously they were paying attention to diversity. They didn't just have like, you know, heterosexual couples. They didn't just have couples. They also had like a widow. You know, single people too. You know, and all, I felt that they tried as much as they could to extend that same care to how Marie was depicted. I felt like watching it, there are a lot of quirks that I found really endearing. There's this part where she's kind of like talking about organizing pet leashes. And she was like, oh, I never got to use leashes when I was a kid because all I had for pets were eel-like fish. And then she kind of like laughed sheepishly. And I thought that was I thought that was really adorable. Like I wasn't necessarily uncomfortable with the way she was depicted. What I was uncomfortable was the way that like some people were reacting to her and calling her like robot-like and making fun of her appearance and a lot of stuff in a way that I felt like I had seen before in the way that other, because there's just so little, there's still so little representation, even with Crazy Rich Asians and all the other shows and Fresh Off the Boat and other stuff that's been coming out. There's still so little representations of Asians or Asian Americans in American media that anything that features like an Asian person in a lead that goes out in America, it'll just like by default be viewed through like a very specific lens, and it can be like really uncomfortable. I think it's basically like what I'm trying to say is that I watched a show. I was okay with the show itself, but the reaction on Twitter, I was just like, oh, for God's sake. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the way like Amy Chow, the way people kind of villainized her after Tiger Mom. But the thing is, like, I felt like she basically, she knew what the stereotypes was, and she was purposely courting that drama. That was my interpretation of what went down. I did read the Tiger Mom book. I didn't think it was that off the hook. I thought it was actually like, I didn't think it was that intense. I do definitely feel like something similar happened as with the Marie Kondo stuff, where like people definitely skewed the media, basically ran off with like a certain perception of her, and people reacted to that instead of the actual like source material. But Marie Kondo itself, though, I think there's just a disconnect between the way she's been talked about or depicted in some reactions to the show and the way she actually comes off in the show, which I think, you know, has been, like we've discussed, pretty mindful and actually pretty compassionate and pretty flexible. So I think I was just kind of really uncomfortable with, honestly, like, you know, kind of like, I guess almost like the Dragon Lady stereotype. I don't know. I'm sure there's more updated stereotypes out there, but that's how I felt like, or I was just kind of reading stuff. Some of the discussion out there, even from people that I respect or that whose opinions I usually hold in highly, were a bit disappointing to me, because I feel like they didn't maybe realize that they were doing that, but it did happen. And, you know, I think that, but that's not necessarily a problem with the show itself. It's just with the lack of representation and, you know, just with the, you know, with the whole state of, you know, the way race and everything is perceived in America. So, I mean, yeah, sorry. I'm just right. like, it's just like, I'm, yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that's basically how I, that was a better expression than I could have managed of how I feel about it as well. Are there any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I was actually, you know, what's interesting is that just before I go, like, a lot of people were like, I think just when the book came out, especially when the show came out, they're like, what exactly does Joy mean? you know, which I think is especially relevant question during these dark political times. You know, what does it mean to feel joy anymore? I remember just in a BuzzFeed article I shared where they were talking about how the show's kind of dark. They say, like, in original Japanese, it's not just like joy. It's a lot more specific. It's kind of like this excitement. It's like, you know, where you kind of perk up and you feel your heart race a bit. In America, joy could be defined, I think, in a lot of ways, like joy, like Christmas, you know, joy, happiness. I do like the idea, because, you know, there's obviously like mindfulness is very buzzy right now, but what it comes down to is kind of, kind of centering yourself and kind of like being, you know, understanding your actions more. But I really like kind of like this discussion of, you know, not just being mindful, but also understanding what makes you happy, I've seen, it's not just Marie Kondo stuff. There's been a lot of books written about, there's a book called Joyful. I think the writer's Ingrid Fidelli. It's basically about like how design and, how design aesthetics could kind of evoke feelings of joyfulness. There's like the Happiness Project. I think it's really interesting how it taps into this kind of ongoing like movement where I think people, it has been like a rough few years for a lot of people. And I think it's really interesting that there's all this, like, I feel like there's people are desperately trying to seek happiness or joy. And even when it comes to like, you know, throwing stuff out,
Well, and I think one of the most interesting parts of the show is when people wrestle with that. And then when somebody in that episode about the writers, that they actually, there's somebody who says, I don't know what this means. Like, I don't get it. And so they have to kind of walk through the process of what Sparking Joy is. And I do think that for me, it's mostly resonant more in just this way of, hey, saying, hey, go through everything and be mindful and ask the why question. But I think you make an interesting point, Catherine, too, that there's also just, it's this idea of centering the importance of joy, which seems you probably don't do enough. And and on that note, I guess we should let you guys go and spark more joy in your own lives, I hope. To our listeners, just a reminder that you can leave us a review in Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts on the podcast app of your choice. And Catherine and Sarah, and as always, Jordan, thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Bye. Let's go.